There's a Indiana Jones movie called Temple of Doom where Indiana Jones is on one side of a chasm and he has to get to the other side. And there's this ancient inscription that says that you need to take a leap of faith. And so he's sitting there scratching his head for a while, figuring, what? Leap of faith. And then he just realizes that he has to literally take a leap of faith. And so he jumps out into the chasm, and there's a, by optical illusion, an unseen footbridge that is there and that he jumps onto. And our lives are rarely so exciting and romantic, of course. But all spiritual growth does involve something very similar to what I just described. There is the need for leaps of faith. But this is no optical illusion. This is something unseen all the same. In other words, God doesn't operate by illusions or by sleight of hand. He operates by, nonetheless, things that are invisible to us, to the human eye. God does provide the narrow way. But we come to chasms sometimes that need to be crossed. There is an ancient inscription. And that is the word of God. And the footbridge is really provided by the grace of God. But that leap of faith, that is a demonstration of what we give to God, the leap of our faith in that grace. This is not talking about Hollywood. It's talking about the Christian walk, the real life of a believer. That's what we tend to talk about or what we should be believing in, but not everyone sees that for what it is. And that's why I give lessons like this. It's not to beat us up or accuse us, but just to really get us to be very earnest and very sincere in what we're claiming is true. In other words, if you claim that there is a need for leaps of faith or need for faith at all, well, then you have to understand that there's an implication to that statement. That implies something. Something has to be done to follow up that. Not every Christian is aware that they need to take a leap of faith. Some people think that they have already arrived. Others are simply not willing to take that leap for different reasons. Usually it's two things, fear or pride. Okay. So it's the fear that they have to take that leap. It's pride. Or perhaps they are just faced with a great amount of peer pressure to not do so, or perhaps they're just, I originally had the word lazy in here, and I reduced it to unmotivated. I'm not sure it's any different, but sometimes people are just unmotivated, okay? They're just not motivated to take that leap of faith. Here's another little illustration. In the modern gaming software, which I know nothing about except what I'm going to tell you, there is high-resolution graphics, there's vivid colors, there's extremely lifelike characters and animation there. Now, I want you to imagine if you were looking at that kind of gaming experience there and you had the same software, but you were viewing it on an old monochrome low-resolution monitor, all in black and white, by the way. Black and white, low-resolution monitor, what we used to call a CRT, which nobody ever knows what that is anymore. But you know what I'm talking about, the giant screens, remember, that were about as big as a dishwasher that you would have sitting on your desk there. And so you're looking at this very high-resolution graphics, vivid colors, extremely lifelike animation, but you're seeing it through this very diminished receptacle, okay? It's just a mere shadow of what it could be. And there's very little appreciation and understanding for what the thing really is because of what you're looking at it through. Does that make sense? So what I'm talking about here is not gaming whatsoever. I'm talking about how we're talking about faith and the expressions of faith, and we're talking about why this is important, and then I'm also talking about our resistance, our natural resistance to that. So imagine, for example, a spiritual-minded Christian trying to explain the joy of Christianity to someone who's looking at Christianity through a monochrome, black-and-white CRT. In other words, he just obeying God out of guilt or fear of hell or something like that. Or a Christian whose gratitude to God leads to great generosity, but he's talking to someone who just gives the bare minimum of what's required, just the very minimum of what he can get away with, just only what is expected. So we have, in other words, a great example, but it's being seen through the eyes of someone who's looking at it in a very dim and diminished manner. Or a Christian who has followed God through some very difficult ordeals. He's talking to someone who has never allowed God to rule and never exercised his faith, never had his faith tested. Or we're talking about a Christian who gains great joy and fulfillment in the Word, but he's talking to someone who's always seen the Bible as just a bunch of do's and don'ts, just a bunch of legal enactments. So we're looking at, we got great opportunity or great provision there, but we're looking at it through a very negative and stifled and suppressed medium. Or perhaps a mature Christian who is looking forward to heaven, talking to someone who is very spiritually immature, who is very callous, very cynical toward Christianity, very cynical toward the church, very cynical toward God, because, after all, things just haven't gone his way or her way. Just doesn't really work, does it? Okay? You're not going to enjoy that gaming experience through that very diminished medium that I talked about, but neither are you going to enjoy what it means to live by faith if you're only looking at it through a very diminished perspective. In Hebrews chapter 11, it says that all of those who are mentioned there took a leap of faith to get where they were afterwards. In other words, you can't remain unmoved. You have to move, and you can change. Drawing near to God always requires a leap of faith, a stepping out onto the narrow road, despite the ease and convenience and comfort of the wide path that so many of us have been on at one time or another. There is a need then. I'm not just waxing philosophical here. I'm just saying this very realistically, very practically. There is a need to step out into that yawning chasm that we call the unknown to the human eye, okay? The invisible world, so to speak, despite the doubts that we might have. There is a need for conviction, not comfort. Remember, we have defined conviction before as a faith or a belief, rather, so strong that it demands action. Something has to be done for it to be alive. What we need then is faith and not fear. Here's a statement that I'm certain that you've heard before, probably many times. If you want something that you've never had, you have to do something you've never done. And I want you to think that that doesn't just apply to you and to me and to us, to Christians. It applies across the board to anybody. In fact, it even applied to Jesus himself. In order for him to have what he never had, he had to do what he had never done before, or never did before. There's an expression of that in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 17, where it says that he had to be made like his brethren in all things so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation or appeasement of God's wrath for us. Okay, so he wants to be a merciful and faithful high priest, but in order for him to do that, he has to become made like us. If he wants what he never had, then he has to do what he's never done. So we're not just talking about this as it applies to you and me and Christians. We're talking about this, how it applies to anyone, even the Son of God. If you want to draw near to God, the path is there, even though it appears to be a yawning black chasm, perhaps to the human mind. But God is there, and to God and to the believer, that path does indeed exist. All right, here's another illustration. Suppose you have an old car, or maybe even a newer car, and it's sluggish, it's got low power, it's drinking oil, it's puffing blue smoke. You know the picture. And so to remedy that, you get out the car wax and car wash, and you start washing and waxing the car. You clean the upholstery, you scrub the tires, you put a new little tree air freshener in there. And you wonder to yourself, is this thing going to drive any faster? Is it going to have any more power? Is it going to drink less oil? You realize that that's not going to do anything for the performance of the car, because you don't have an exterior problem, and you have an interior problem. And I'm not talking about the interior of the car, I'm talking about the engine. You have an engine problem, okay? And you can't address an engine problem with cosmetic outside external fixes, because the real problem is internal. And so I want you to imagine now that me, for example, that I'm spiritually sluggish, I have low power, I'm just putting along as a Christian, and my attendance is weak, I don't participate very much, or maybe not much at all, and I don't get much out of the sermons or out of the services, my contribution is weak or non-existent, and the response I get from Christians might be, well, you just need to go to church more often, or you need to come to the potluck, or come to the singing, or come to the group meeting, or read your Bible, or talk with a preacher. And I'm not trying to diminish any of those things. They all have their place, and they all do provide a certain amount of encouragement and support there. But the real problem is not that. That's a cosmetic fix. You're forcing me, in essence, into a Christian thinking mold when, in fact, I'm not thinking like a Christian. Okay? In other words, you're thinking that way, and you're trying to mold me toward what you're thinking about, things that bring you joy and satisfaction, but you're looking at this whole thing through a color monitor with high resolution and the latest in software gadgetry and everything else, and I'm looking at this through an old black and white monochrome CRT. Do you see what I'm getting at? So we're not looking at things the same way. You're looking at Christianity in this very graphic, powerful, joyous way. I'm looking at this in the very negative, kind of cynical, very worldly perspective. You don't realize then that in your trying to wash and wax my life, that really I have an engine problem, not a dirt problem, okay? And in other words, dirt on the outside there. I have a dirt on the inside. Something's wrong inside. It's not a Christian lifestyle problem, it's a heart problem. So the problem really is not my sporadic attendance, it's not really my particular symptoms themselves. The real problem is I just don't believe as I should believe. Once again, internal, not external. And such people like that are never going to enjoy or appreciate Christianity unless or until they have a change of heart and learn to believe. Now, I don't know if there's anyone like that here right now. I'm not here, again, to accuse and to isolate and point fingers, and I'm just simply throwing that out. That's just where it's at, okay? You're never going to enjoy Christianity for what it is until you learn to believe like you really should. And really what we're talking about is two different kinds of thinking. There is static thinking, and then there is dynamic thinking. Static is a word that basically means stay still, okay? It's motionless thinking. It's not moving. It's fixed. It's stationary, as opposed to that kind of thinking which is moving, which is adapting, which is transforming. Put a little contrast here up on the screen. Notice static thinking never changes because those people who employ static thinking are afraid of change. They don't want to take risks. They're all about personal comfort. It's all about what makes me feel comfortable, okay? Because that's what static thinking is all about. That's all about protecting the status quo. Whereas dynamic thinking is always about moving forward and accepting change. I should clarify, accepting changes that are permissible, okay? Not just change for the sake of change, but permissible changes and taking necessary risks in order to advance that cause and seeking to do the right thing, even to one's own hurt. These are two very different people. They might sit on the same pew, go to the same church, sing the same songs, even pray the same prayers, but they're two very different people. One is motionless in his faith, the other one is very dynamic. One is not moving in his spiritual life, the other one is leaping forward in his spiritual life. Do you see what I'm saying here? Sometimes people get stuck in their mindset. They say, well, I'm never going to get past in fill in the blank, where I'm at now, basically. Okay, I'm never going to get past this thing that happened to me, this thing that person said to me, this bad experience I had, etc. You know, whatever it was, they're never going to get past that, and so they don't. They have pre-programmed themselves for stagnation. They have set themselves up for a fall. They have poisoned their own thinking. They know that they ought to be happy and content, but they're frustrated and unfulfilled instead. Or, and this is often goes hand in hand with the other, their happiness is based upon a perfect world, perfect people, perfect results, which, by the way, is never going to happen in this life, okay? So again, setting yourself up for a fall, pre-programming yourself for failure. And it doesn't have to be that way, but that's how people think. And they'll say things like, well, I'll never be happy unless my wife or husband treats me the way that I expect to be treated, or my children grow up flawlessly, or the worship service are conducted according to my preferential standard, or the congregation satisfies my every expectation, or everything goes just the way I think it ought to go in my life, or God answers my prayers exactly how I worded them without any deviation, or God accepts me for exactly as I am without making any changes or expecting me to change. That's static thinking. There's a person who doesn't want to move, just wants the world to move around him, wants to conform to him, wants to transform for him. He doesn't want to be the one who changes or transforms. He wants the world around him and all the people around him to change and transform in order to meet him where he's at. Basically, what a person is saying is, I want Christianity to give me what I really want. Well, here's someone who's not drinking from the wells of water that God provides, but he's digging his own wells, if you understand the biblical metaphor that I'm employing right now. Okay, he's trying to create his own Garden of Eden, which, by the way, is not here. It's not in this life, and it's not found by standing still and waiting for everything and everyone to cater to what you want. Because the fact is, what you really want is on the other side of the chasm. And you can't get there by typical or human or worldly expectations. You just can't get there that way. You can't get there by imposing this self-limiting, short-sighted, fear and safety thinking on your life with God, a God who transcends everything we know about human life and earthly life. He transcends all of that. So we're basically, when we do this, we're trying to bring God down out of heaven, stick him in our little box-like life here, and say, I need you to perform according to the parameters and the boundaries that I have established for you. And when God doesn't, then we say, well, then you failed. And the fact is, God hasn't failed at all. We have failed God. We have failed to look at life and look at our walk with him and look at Christianity the way that he had intended for us to look at it. We took the prerogative, which we did not have, and we imposed it upon him, and then we make him out to be, in essence, the problem. The fact is, there are no earthly bridges to God. There are no actual ladders to heaven. There are no secret passages to peace and happiness. If you're going to find true contentment and completeness, you have to abandon the stumbling blocks that stand in the way. And one of those stumbling blocks is your own refusal, if indeed this is the case, to move forward. That in itself is a stumbling block. Your refusal, your resistance to move forward. I can personally identify with this because I've had to remove that stumbling block a number of times. It's not something you remove once. It seems to reappear over time when we get lazy or complacent or frustrated or disappointed, or disillusioned. It just seems to reappear, and we got to move it again. Otherworldly joy and peace that surpasses comprehension, contentment regardless of circumstances, realistic transformation of the heart, it all sounds good, and it all is good, but it's just pure fiction to the unbeliever or the person who is deluded into thinking that he already has it when he doesn't. Just pure fiction to those kinds of people. Not because it really is fiction, but because they can't see it for what it really is, and they don't believe they really have it. But to the true believer, all of these are absolutely real. They are meaningful. They are fulfilling. Not because those people are so brilliant and super and intelligent. It's because they realize that there is a higher power at work in their life. So someone says, well, how do I get there? I mean, how do I get to the other side of that chasm? Well, you do it the same way that all the other faithful men and women have done in the Bible. You have to take a leap of faith. You think about Noah, for example, and building the ark and what he was told to do there. He took a leap of faith there. You think about Abraham leaving his family and God blessing all the families of the earth through him. He took a great leap of faith in what he did there. You think about Moses and his being commissioned to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt and through the Red Sea and parting the Red Sea and going into the Promised Land, or on their way at least to the Promised Land there. He took a great leap of faith. You think about David when he confronted this giant man named Goliath, and how he confronted him one-on-one there. With God's help behind him, he was successful. Why did he do that? He took a great leap of faith. You think about Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego there, who defied King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon and defied the king's orders and were thrown into that fiery furnace there. What did they do? Well, they took a great leap of faith in order to get to that point. You think about Esther, how she risked her life to save the Jews. She had to go and confront King Ahasuerus and put her own neck on the line there for those people's sake. She took a great leap of faith. If you want something you've never had, you have to do something you've never done. All those people didn't just talk about faith And we should not just talk about faith in our sermons and our spiritual conversations. They did not just sing about faith in their hymns, and we should not just sing about faith in our hymns. They did not treat faith as a concept, and neither should we treat faith as a mere biblical concept. But they put their faith to work in order to cross this otherwise insurmountable chasm. What they really did was they trusted in God and His Word. They put their complete trust in God. They put themselves in God's hand. They knew that when they leapt off that comfortable safety zone there called what I know to be true and what I've seen and can touch and it was tangible to me, they leapt off of that into, in essence, not a black void, but really into the hand of God. And God took care of them. Faith as an idea or a concept is not really faith as a reality until it is tested, until it is put into action. Hebrews chapter 11, once again, by faith, and then it goes on and talks about a number of different people. By faith, someone did something. That's how it always is. Every single person who is credited with faith in the Bible did something that God looked at and said, that's why I'm crediting them with faith, because they did something. Not because they thought of something or sang something or attended church, but because they did something that manifested that actual faith in Him. You don't have faith in the firemen or holding that safety net below your, the five-story building that you happen to be in the top of that's on fire. You don't have faith in those firemen there when they're yelling at you, jump, if you're still standing on the ledge of that burning building. You have to do something. You have to take that leap. You don't have absolute faith in a parachute if you refuse to jump out of an airplane. You don't have faith in yourself if you're terrified to pursue that promotion at work or take up a new career to better yourself. You don't really have faith in yourself if you don't do those sort of things. And you don't really have faith in Jesus Christ if you will not deny yourself and take up your cross and follow Him as He tells you to do. You're just talking. You're just blowing smoke. You're just going through the motions, but you're really not putting your faith to the test. Doesn't Jesus say somewhere, Luke 6, verse 46, why do you call me Lord, Lord, when you don't do what I say? In other words, you're not really exercising faith in me. You're just mouthing the words. Oh, you're Lord, but you're not treating Him as Lord because He says, I need you to jump, and you're saying, I can't do that. And that's where so many people are, unfortunately. I hope that you're not there or hope that you don't want to stay there, but you're not treating Jesus as Lord if you're not willing to put your faith in Him. We're told in Romans 1:17 that the righteous man shall live by faith. And that doesn't mean that he should just have faith as a concept or a belief or think about faith or philosophize about faith or theorize about faith or attend a Bible class where they're talking about faith or have a nice PowerPoint presentation on faith. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about someone who really does live by faith. And to live by faith means to conduct yourself or walk according to God's definition of faithfulness. We're told in 1 John chapter 2, verse 4, and you've seen me use this passage a number of times in the last several months, the one who says, I've come to know Him, which is so popular today, right? Lots of people claiming to be Christians, lots of people claiming to be spiritual and everything else, and these people say that they've come to know Him, but they're not keeping His commandments, and God says, you're a liar. I didn't say that. That's not the church's position here. That's God's position. That's a factual statement that person is a liar if he does not keep the commandments. Well, how could we reword that there? Really what he's saying is you're not putting your faith in me. You're just mouthing the words of faith, but you're not really following through with faith. Because if you did, then you would be keeping my commandments, is really what he's saying there. But if you go down to verse 6 in that same passage, just a few verses later, John does go on to say that the one who says abides in Him ought himself to walk in the same manner as Jesus walked. Well, that walking there is a verb, and it's describing there an action. In other words, you can't just sit still in a pew and be active as a Christian. This is what we do to learn things. This is not what we do to practice things. This is training right here. Okay, this is rah-rah a little bit, right? This is a pep rally in some cases. This is our motivational speaking in some respects. This is where we learn the basics and learn the fundamentals and learn the tactics and learn the resources, but this isn't where we put it all into practice, is it? To live by faith means to walk accordingly. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7 says, "For we walk by faith, not by sight." You can't wait till you see the path. You need to believe in God. If he tells you to jump, then jump. Because he's the one who's going to catch you. Those who don't trust in Christ's leadership refuse to live by faith. They stand at the edge of the chasm and they have no idea how to cross, and therefore they never grow. It's not surprising. They never grow. It's actually a logical conclusion. They're standing still, therefore they're never moving. Doesn't that make sense? You're never going to grow, never going to get to the other side because you're standing still and not willing to take the leap. Jesus' gospel message is this: in order to get what you really want, you have to do what you've never done. You have to take a leap of faith. And that means you need to stop waiting until you have provided for everything for yourself. I see this so often in Christians across the board, not just in this congregation, but just Christians in general, you know, where they're talking about their future plans and there's a lot of I, me, and my in there. In other words, this is what I'm going to do for me because my whatever, you know, there's a lot of the singular pronouns in there. It's not about, well, as the Lord wills, or if the Lord wills, or God has led me to, or, you know, I put my trust and faith in God. There's not a lot of that. There's more of this other thing. Building our own bridges to our own future. Instead of trusting God to support us, we want to build our own bridges. We trust in our own talents. We trust and rely on our own power. We rest on our own strength. We try to fix everything ourselves. Do you know anyone like this? Do you know anyone that fits that description? There's lots of people like that. This is a very common human problem. Unfortunately, it's also a common Christian problem. What I'm saying is that we Christians need to think differently than the world thinks. If the world wants to think that way, we expect that, but we should not expect that of ourselves and should not expect that of, you know, each one of ourselves as well. So there's something that has to be done. What has to be done is you need to believe that God wants to enrich your life. He wants to impart spiritual blessings to you. That's what he wants to do, okay? But you have to trust in what he says in order for him to do that, to the degree that is really intended. You have to believe that he has a mission for you, that he has a purpose for you, that he has a plan for you. I tell people that whenever I can, you know, God has a plan for you. God has something for you to do. And then usually this response is, well, what is it? It's like, you know, it's not my place to tell you what God's plan is for you. It's really God's place to tell you what his plan is for you. And so you need to discover what that plan is. And sometimes that discovery process takes a little while. God doesn't just drop a little leaflet out of heaven, falls into your hand, goes, Chad, this is my plan for you. I wish it was that simple sometimes, but that's just not how it happens. So how it happens is through your persistence in the Word, your understanding of God's will. We're supposed to know what the will of the Lord is before you can ever engage in it. Okay, you have to be prayerful. You have to trust in God that he has a way, a plan, a path for you to take. Again, I'm not saying you're not doing this. I'm just simply saying you do need to do this. Everyone who is a Christian needs to do this. Stop living in fear. Stop living in hesitation. I'm talking to myself when I say that because I know that I myself have struggled with fear and hesitation all of my life, and maybe some of you have too. This is a real thing that we have to deal with. Pray for him to reveal this to you, whatever it is he wants you to do. Ask, seek, knock. Do that actively. Don't just do it once and then be done with it for the next couple months. Do this every day. Do this every week. Do this on a regular basis and see if something doesn't change. Jesus' preaching is all about if you wish to enter into the kingdom of heaven or draw near to God, first of all, you have to have faith. Secondly, you have to exercise it. In other words, you have to know what faith is. You have to have it defined for you because it's not something you come up with on your own. It's not something that is self-defined. It's not like, you know, you have your faith and then I have my version of faith and then we have, you know, whatever it is, number of faiths here. I realize that faith is personal, that I have my convictions, but when we're talking about faith, we're not talking about something that is personal. We're talking about something that all of us have in God. So he says in Matthew 18, verse 21 through 22, after Peter says, well, basically, I want to be right with God by forgiving. And Jesus says, well, then you need to take a leap of faith. You need to be forgiving without limitations. That doesn't mean without people being responsible for their sins. What it means is without counting how many times you have forgiven someone or forgiven people in general. Forgive without limit. Matthew 19, verse 16, this rich young ruler comes up to Jesus and says, basically, I want eternal life. And Jesus says, excellent decision. Here, take a leap of faith. I need you to sell what you have, give it to the poor, and come follow me, and you shall have treasures in heaven. In Luke chapter 9, verse 57 through 62, the very end of that chapter there, we've got three different people, basically say, I want to follow you. And Jesus says, excellent, there you have to take a leap of faith then. You need to leave your old life behind and don't look back. And this is a problem that we struggle with because we don't always want to leave our old life behind. And sometimes we do look back and we try to cling to what we should have left behind. So imagine a Christian today saying, I want to be more like you. And Jesus says, excellent decision. Here's what you need to do. Take a leap of faith. Stop being content, if indeed that's what you're doing, with who you are now. Stop trusting in yourself. Start immersing yourself in prayer, in study, and fellowship, because that is absolutely crucial to your spiritual success, no matter who you are. And exercise your faith, and he says, and I will transform your heart. And here's why a lot of people won't do that. It's because a leap of faith takes effort. Often the process requires time, energy, prayer, as I mentioned, and lots of practice. And many want instant results from little or no effort. This is the way of the world. This is the society we're in right now. This is the mindset many people succumb to. I want instant results by taking a pill, by hearing a scripture, by listening to a sermon, by reading a very short reading, by watching a YouTube video, or reading a Facebook posting or something. I want my whole life to be transformed by something just microscopically small here in comparison. I just want this tiny little thing to, and then boom, my life explodes. And that's just not realistic, but that's where a lot of people are at there. Someone says, well, I want to have better prayers. Well, you're going to have to work at that. You're going to have to take a leap of faith. As men, if you want to pray better when you come up front, well, then I would encourage you, pray better. Some of you are working on it. David, you're working on that, and I know that because I can hear it in your prayers. Others of you are working on that as well, okay? But in order to do it, you've got to take a leap of faith. You have to stop, first of all, praying like you used to. And you have to start incorporating better praying methods. And that takes work and practice and everything else. But if you put in the time, the effort, you ask God for help, then those things are going to happen. Someone says, well, I want to be more loving or more forgiving or more compassionate. Well, great. That's an excellent objective there in mind. So you're going to have to take a leap of faith because that's not going to happen by you sitting on a church pew thinking about it. You got to get out there and start loving and forgiving and being compassionate to people. Which means you actually have to talk to people. I know it's tough, but if you're going to love people, you got to confront them. And if you're going to have compassion on people, you can't just do that through a Facebook like, you actually have to, call them up or confront them or something like that. Everyone wants this disconnected, compassion. And we'll be talking about that in the next couple of weeks. That very idea of disconnecting ourselves, but then still sounding like we're really caring people. It's not really what it's all about. You have to go through your same daily routine, never breaking out of that routine, never picking up the phone, never getting in the car, never talking with someone over coffee. You have to change your ways. If you really want to change, then take that leap of faith and take your old schedule and just rip it in half and go, we're going to write a new schedule. And it's going to be a better one than what we had. And I'm a little bit scared about that, and I'm a little bit nervous about how that's all going to work out, and I don't really know where this is going to go, and people are going to say things that are going to make me very uncomfortable. I know that. I do not like doing all of this stuff, but I know this is the right thing to do, and that's why I'm going to do it. Not because I'm trying to protect myself, but because this is what God wants me to do, and that is worth more to me than my fears. That's where you have to be. That is your leap of faith right there. Someone says, I want to be a better servant. Well, you're going to take a leap of faith in order to do that, because no one gets better at serving by practicing old serving or not serving at all. If you want to be a better servant, then you've got to stop doing what you were doing before and start doing something better. Doesn't that just make sense? It's like if you want to be a better cook, what do you have to do? You have to stop being a bad cook, right? And you have to start learning new recipes or new ways of cooking or new methods of cooking or preparing foods. Doesn't that just make sense? Why is it so practical? And, it makes sense, you know, when we're talking about cooking. But when we come to Christianity, I can sit on a pew, fold my hands, and go home untouched, unmoved, untransformed, unmotivated to do anything else until the next time I sit on a pew. That's where so much of the religious world is. You can't afford to be there because you're not growing. You say, okay, so I'm not growing. No big deal. No, you don't understand. Not growing means not drawing near to God. Not drawing near to God means you're not getting any closer to heaven. And not getting any closer to heaven means you're drifting away from the very thing that you want the most. Someone says, I want to be more spiritual. Excellent. Take a leap of faith. Do some research as to what that really means. Research in your Bible, that is. Talk to people who are more spiritual and find out what they did to get more spiritual and copy their methods. Follow in their footsteps. Listen to what they're saying. Do something. Do something. Because you're not going to get spiritual just by thinking about it. And you're not going to get spiritual just by coming to church. Although I'm glad you're here. And this is, remember, training. But this isn't where it actually all pans out here. The bridge across the chasm really is the grace of God. It's faith that gives us that momentum or that courage to step out and walk on that bridge, but it's grace that holds us up. If you want something that you've never had, you have to do something you've never done. If you want to press forward to the upward call of Christ, like Paul says there in Philippians 3, then you have to stop standing still and looking at that call from a distance. If you truly want to grow in the Lord, then you have to stop doing all those things that stifle that growth and suppress that growth. And you have to start doing what nurtures and cultivates growth. Because if you do the same thing over and over, then you're never going to change, which means you're never going to grow, which means you're going to always stay where you are, which means you're never going to get what you really want. If you truly want deeper love, greater joy, better knowledge, higher life, you have to abandon the static thinking and the self-defeating habits and learn and act upon the words of Jesus and believe that he will give you success. Someone says, well, I can't understand what you're saying there. Well, you're absolutely right. You can't understand if you think that by dipping your toe in the pool, that is swimming. It's not. And I really truly think that that's where so many Christians are. They kind of dip their toe in the pool of prayer, in the pool of Bible study, the pool of fellowship, or the pool of service. They dip their toe in the pool of what it means to be a disciple, and they call that discipleship. And that's not what that is. You have to get beyond all that. So if you truly want to draw near to God, then you're going to have to draw away from whatever it is that's stopping you from drawing near to God. And you're going to have to do what everyone else does who is drawing near to God. If you truly want heaven, then you're going to have to do whatever it takes to get there. If that's really what you want, I mean, if that's how you want to live your life, you're going to have to do those things. Look at the list here. I mean, you're going to have to give beyond what is expected of you. You're going to have to make sacrifices for the sake of others and not just, you know, make plans for yourself, which is what so many people do. You're going to have to let God truly reign in your heart and not just let yourself reign in your heart, okay? It's not all about you. It's not all about your family. It's not all about just the things in your little bubble here. It's so much more than that, and you have to see that for what it is. You have to freely share the gospel with the lost. So many times, you know, we talk about sharing the gospel and personal work and evangelism and spreading the good news. I don't really know what's going on with all that. I don't really have a lot of evidence, honestly, that all of us are engaging in all of that. And I've told you before, I'll tell you again, that if you can bring someone to me, I'll help you teach them, but I'm not going to do it for you. I will help you. But you've got to do the work yourself to get that person in front of someone like me or learn how to do it yourself, which is fine, in order for something to be done. Forgive those people who have hurt you. I know they've hurt you. I know what it's like to be hurt. I also know how it means to hurt someone. I've been on both sides of that, and I bet you have too. We've got to get over that. I don't. It doesn't matter how deeply you were hurt. The fact is, if you're allowing that hurt to stand in between you and a walk with God, then you're allowing that hurt to destroy you. And it doesn't have to be that way. Don't just sing songs like Living for Jesus, you know, and all working out the chorus and the notes and everything else, but not actually living for Jesus. We could go through all of those things there, but really what it comes down to is you've got to understand that there's a bridge of grace, and you've got to accept that. You've got to practice that. You can't just talk about it. We can't just talk about it. So if you want to grow, if you want to increase your love, you want to draw near to God, you really want to be with God in heaven, there's some things you have to do. You have to do some things to get there. First, because God has given you the means by which to do these things. And secondly, because it is worth the struggle. Heaven is worth the struggle. It is worth the wait. Thirdly, because heaven, life with God, is exactly what your soul craves the most, whether or not you realize it. And then fourthly, the alternative is unacceptable and completely unnecessary. The question is, how bad do you want it? Remember that little video we saw Wednesday night, those of you who are here? How bad do you want it? I actually wrote the notes to my lesson before I saw that video. So we're on the same page, me and Tyra Lockett. I mean, we're like right there, okay? But how bad do you want it? You can't just stand on the other side. You can't just stand still and simultaneously call that walking by faith. It's a contradiction. No more than you can dip your toe in the pool of servitude and call that serving God or discipleship. It doesn't work that way. How bad do you want it? Static faith is really no faith at all. It pretends to work. It seems to support. It appears to carry, but really there's no substance, and it fails upon testing. And those who practice that static faith are just fooling themselves. They will not be with God. They will not be with God because God will not accept static faith. Dynamic faith allows you to leap where there is no apparent bridge, fully trusting God to bear that person up. That's a whole different level. It's a whole different mindset. It's a whole different approach here. How does Christianity look to you? Is it bright and colorful? Is it attractive, realistic? Or is it boring and unimpressive? Are you looking at it through a monochrome black and white CRT? Okay. And if it is the latter, whose fault is that? And who is responsible for seeing it differently? Well, you are responsible for that, but you're not alone. Jesus wants to help you, and he will help you if you let him. Okay. We're wanting to help you as well, and we will help you if you let us. If the engine needs an overhaul, you're not going to change anything by washing and waxing the car. Likewise, if your heart needs an overhaul, so to speak, you're not going to do anything by simply going to church and listening to sermons. What you really need to do is take some leaps of faith, do something that you've never done. You realize the first biggest leap of faith is just becoming a Christian. You've all taken a leap of faith in the fact that you have become a Christian. Where you've gone from there, or what you've done since then, well, that remains to be seen, or is still, you know, a matter of, you know, your relationship with God and what we have seen of that. But my point here is that we've all taken a leap of faith, if indeed we've come into Christ. And so if there's anyone here this morning that wants to take that leap of faith and come into Christ, become a Christian, be baptized into Christ, and enter the sanctuary of believers, those who are redeemed by God and purchased with the blood of Christ and are on their way to heaven, but are ready to take up the task of what it takes to get there. Maybe that's you this morning. Or maybe you've made that commitment and you just have really faltered on that and you want to renew your dedication to God. This will be your opportunity to respond. If you need to come forward, do so as we stand and sing the song that's been selected for.